Oh, yes. It's the Gab and Jules show, and we're back. Jules, before we get started, I have some excellent news for you.
Go on.
So, the gods of the Premier League have decreed that Arsenal are playing Monday night, a few hours after we tape this, which means I won't be asking you about Arsenal.
You won't wind me up.
I won't be trolling you like Ian Dark did. If you haven't seen this video, it's out there. You get to see Angry Jules. Angry Jules being skillfully wound up. Skillfully and artfully wound up by Steve Nichol and Ian Dark. Ian Dark, the nicest man in the world. Goodness me. But look, we're going to talk Lazio and Juve and Serie A. We're going to talk Borussia Mönchengladbach and Bayern. But most of all, we'll be talking the Manchester Derby. And who better? Who better? This is such a cliche. But
I know, but still.
Who better than Mark Ogden? Let's both think of people, too, who would be better than Mark Ogden to discuss this game.
Actually.
Pep Guardiola? He'd be better.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Probably not. Paul Pogba, assuming he watched the game. He was there, right?
Yeah, he was fun to talk to. Yeah.
Alex
Ferguson, who was there.
Sir Alex Ferguson?
Would be cool to
definitely.
Talk to.
How awesome would that be? So yeah, we're not bringing you any of these people. We're bringing you Mark Ogden. All right, Jules, there's one place to start, and we've been inundated with requests and emails. So back by popular demand, it's Mark Ogden. Augie, you're in Frankfurt. You're on your way to Salzburg. We were just discussing this off air before we get, obviously, to the big game. There's something a lot of Liverpool fans haven't worked out about the Champions League this week. Is this right?
Well, yeah, I think it seems to have gone like unnoticed by a lot of people that Liverpool, if they lose in Salzburg, will be knocked out of the Champions League. The reigning European champions are one defeat away from being eliminated before Christmas, which is, you know, I don't know. It seems a big deal to me, but it's definitely gone under the radar a little bit. There's a guy that you and Jules may have heard of, Erling Haaland. I don't know if you've seen Peter a while ago.
Yeah. No more talking about that guy. I think we've hyped him enough. Let's wait for him to score his hat trick. By the way, that's only if Napoli avoid defeat against Genk, which the way they're going is not a foregone conclusion.
That will happen.
But then again, you can make the argument. Liverpool have won it 5 times. They care about winning the Premier League more. They just won it last season.
Six times.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm so used to hearing the 5 times chat.
I know.
Haven't been updated. So let's get on to the Manchester Derby. Now, you did not see this coming, right, Augie? Please be honest and say
you did not see this coming.
No, not at all. I mean, listen, City haven't been great this season, but United haven't been great either. I thought the win against Tottenham was a great result, but it felt a bit like United have played this season, hot one day, cold the next, and I thought their away form and, you know, the kind of record against City in recent years told me that they'd lose, but City were just terrible. I mean, United, to be fair, had great pace and they killed them on the counter-attack, but City were awful. Then the piece I wrote after the game was that United made City look old and slow, and all of a sudden City got a rebuilding job on it, and that may sound knee-jerk, but you look at the age of the players. David Silva, 34, Fernandinho, 33, or maybe the other way around. They haven't replaced Company, they haven't got a left back. Aguero's 31, he's injured again. You know, all of a sudden the big key players need replacing, and Liverpool are pulling away. United might be resurgent. So City's got a bit of a transition ahead of them, I think.
I'm glad you're already projecting ahead. And yes, that is a gigantic knee jerk. just about the game, I was really impressed with Marcus Rashford. And he said something afterwards, which, you know, seems obvious, but kind of struck me. He said that, you know, now that he's playing consistently, it's a big help for him with his confidence. I think also the fact that he's a little bit older than he was, which is easy to forget, but you know, a year or two when you're that age makes a huge difference. You see this dude up close every week. He gets terrible service because the midfield is terrible.
And the left back behind him as well.
And the guy behind him isn't much. But, I mean, are we at the stage where we can talk about Rashford carrying United? Or is that putting too much responsibility on him?
I mean, talk about knee-jerk reactions, yeah. But no, I think... let's just start. I think a lot of Rashford. And during the time when people were getting on his back, I always felt that he was a much better player than people gave him credit for, and he was much maligned, basically. And he played a lot more under Mourinho than people, again, gave him credit for. They're too quick to look at the certain stats. But, you know, Rashford's a real talent. I think when you compare his progress at his age to what Ronaldo and Rooney had done at United at the same age, he's ahead of them in terms of appearances and goals. So he's a real talent. I think, you know, Pat Nevin is a name that we may not translate beyond the UK, but I mean, both of you guys know Pat Nevin. He used to play for Everton and Chelsea as a winger. Pat made the observation that in many ways, he's got similar traits to Neymar without the kind of the nonsense that goes with it. He's got the trick, he's got the pace, he can score. He's not prolific as Neymar.
Right, come on. We use knee-jerk a lot this morning. Please, don't compare Rashford with Neymar, right?
No, he turns up more often, doesn't he, to be fair? But, Neymar is a much more prolific player. He's a different player in the second sense. He's a goal scorer, but I think Rashford has got his pace, he's got a trick. And, yes, I think he is a player that can carry this United team, but I think he does need help. I think United need to kind of make sure these young players like Rashford, like McTominay, like even Brandon Williams to a certain extent, like Mason Greenwood, to ensure their progress is accelerated by signing the experienced players that can just bring them on a little bit, just make sure they don't, you know, suffer the same inconsistencies that all young players do. I think they need the experience around them now to help them develop, and that's on Solskjaer.
All right, well, let's talk about the experienced guy who's there and who they don't need to sign and who happens to be injured and who I almost feel like some people have forgotten about, maybe because he's not there to be everybody's whipping boy anymore. But Paul Pogba will be back at some point. You guys are both going to tell me when, because I have no freaking clue. But I'm imagining, is there a scenario where Solskjaer takes this forward, takes the fact that the defense looks better and Wan-Bissaka is great and whatever else, you put Pogba into the mix, who can actually pass and be a leader, and I know he's got a ton of experience. Could that be the tipping point that takes United into the top four this season?
Well,
is that necessary for that to happen, basically, is what I'm saying?
No, I mean, the column I've done this morning, which will be on the ESPN website at some point today, is about that point. It's where Pogba fits in, because he's the most talented player in the squad. He's the most high-profile player in the squad. But I don't know if he's the right player at the wrong time for Man United. I don't know where he fits
in. I know. He can pass, he can create, he can score, he's a leader. You know what? We can go and chuck this out all the time, but ultimately, we overcomplicate the game.
Well, yeah,
there's no reason you can't drop Pogba into this midfield
for free. Make some adjustments around it
and make United a better team than they are now, no?
But that's the problem. You know, I don't think they have the personnel to accommodate Pogba, because you take Fred out of the team. I think Fred is one of the tallest players we've got, but Fred plays well at the weekend.
But play Pogba for Lingard then. Lingard is just...
Lingard's pace and work rate made a difference on Saturday. You don't get that pace and work rate from Pogba. This is the problem.
Pogba will give you something else, which is he will find the passes for Rashford and Martial and Daniel James into space on the counter-attack, where he's so good at, because there's all that space to aim for with a 50-yard diagonal, which Lingard can't do either. So,
well, that is a big question, because with Pogba in the team, I don't think he could play the same counter-attacking game as he played at the weekend. I think he was slowed up in a certain extent, but yes, you're right, he would bring a game-changing pass, he would bring vision, he would bring a goal for it. He's not scored this season, by the way, in 6 games, but you can't put him in place of Fred, because you don't play Pogba in a deep-lying position, because he hasn't got the discipline to do it. He just hasn't. He's proved that a million times.
He won the World Cup with France in that position, though.
Yeah, with N'Golo Kante next to him, he's a world-class.
Wait, McTominay's the janitor now? I mean, I know McTominay's not Kante, but, I mean...
No, McTominay's come on a lot, and he has made a big difference this season, but I think he's asking too much at this stage of his career to be the guy that does the Makélélé or Kante role for Paul Pogba. He's not experienced enough.
Let's talk City. Obviously, you're going to say that they need a rebuild and they're old. They looked old. And I think in some ways they did. I'm going to check out my ritual. We all agree. We've been banging this drum all year. There's no excuse for letting company go without a plan B.
Yeah.
Even a body. You don't need a 100 million guy. You don't need Harry Maguire. You could have just needed a live body who was not Otamendi and Stones just for depth. We all agree on that.
Should we go back? Should we go back on the left back as well, that they should have signed 2.5 years ago?
You could make the point about the left back. I would say Zinchenko's been out. Nobody seems to be talking about this.
Come on.
Down the road last season, I thought he was really, really steady. He was a really, really steady performer, but we can all, one guy also who's kind of disappeared off the radar, hasn't been mentioned, it's Leroy Sané being out. I'm just going to chuck this in there, because if Sané is part of the winger rotation, then that means that you don't have to play Bernardo Silva wide so often. And that means that then you can use Bernardo Silva inside and give De Bruyne and David Silva a breather as well. I think that's another factor. I think last night on the show, they were saying, oh, Jesus is nowhere near Aguero. I think Gabriel Jesus is one of the top 5 or 10 center forwards in the world. It's just that he makes very different runs from Aguero. His movement's completely different. But, okay, so now we got all the mitigating factors out of the way. Sorry, Pep. What responsibility, beyond the signings, does Pep have in this context?
I think he has to look at the way teams have evolved over the last 2 or 3 years to kind of fox him a little bit. You know, Liverpool are the case in point. Liverpool play such fast counter-attacking football now. United do the same. And I think, you know, City is still kind of a possession-based team. They're a much quicker possession-based team than the likes of Van Gaal's United were. But maybe the game is kind of taken over or overtaken Pep in the last 12 months, for instance. He's not quite caught yet. I'm sure he will. But I think he needs to change the personnel of his team or change the way they play. I don't think he's getting the best out of De Bruyne. I think De Bruyne, you know, yes, he tops the assist tables, but he was peripheral at the weekend and he was the same at Anfield recently. I just think he needs to find a way to get his players playing as a team again. It just looked like too many square pegs in round holes at the weekend. And, you know, you're right about Jules. I mean, the left back isn't a left back. They haven't got a left back. And the defensive situation complete. They've got so many foreign players, they had to sign an English defender, and they decided, I think quite rightly, that Harry Maguire wasn't worth £85 million this summer. But it left them with a hole, which they're now suffering for. You know, Rodri's suffering, he's not the Fernandinho figure. I don't know, doesn't give Phil Foden more of a chance? You know, this kid would have played 50 games by Man United, maybe even Liverpool would have given him a game, but he's just not giving him a game. I think he needs to freshen up a little bit.
I thought the lack of a lot of intensity, not just in that game on Saturday, but I thought since the start of the season, even in the game that they played well and they won, I thought they lack a lot of fluidity that they had before. And for me, partly because the fullbacks haven't been good enough and they're so important in the way Pep plays. The issue I have with Pep is that I really expected, seeing how the game started on Saturday, for him to come up with something like, okay, it's not working, we're losing, this is what I'm going to do and change. Instead, he went Otamendi for Stones, because Stones was injured, right? Gundogan for Rodri, which is like position for position. There's nothing new there.
He's got a bit of the sorries about him.
And then Mahrez for Bernardo Silva. Hang on, Pep. Where is the, okay, this is not working, I'm going to change something. Why do you keep the same formation? Why do you just change a player for the same player in the same position? Why don't you try something else? Where are your ideas? What is Arteta bloody doing?
This is where I pull out the Johan Cruyff quote. If plan A isn't working, plan B is to get plan A to execute better. They have better players if they simply do their jobs better, perhaps with more intensity.
Really?
Really? Well, you know, it's something that has served them. It's something which, well, it worked to the tune of, 117 points or whatever stupid amount it was. No, more than that.
No, 198.
198 points over two seasons.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that last season and the season before he couldn't find the solutions. This season, in the games where they're behind, he can't find any solutions to turn the game around.
All right.
I think, Jules, to that point, it's similar in the Champions League where you get to the latter stages, teams have a way to play against them, and they can't find a way. That's great at finding a way to bully teams and beat teams like I have been for the last 2 years. But when teams come back in with a different challenge, like on Saturday, he just sits there with his arms folded and shakes his head. It's almost like what people have the audacity to do something different against Man City or Pep Guardiola. Well, he has to change as well.
I'm not quite having this with the Champions League. I just invite everybody out there to go back, find some YouTubes about the way that they went out the last two seasons. And it wasn't because they were outplayed. I want to check it forward. I know, Mark, you got a flight to catch. So, obviously there was a horrendous incident that happened late on. Fred and Lingard near the corner flag. Certainly, Fred appeared to be racially abused. There's all loads of investigations going on. I just want to point something out. I'll make my point here. I'm going to ask a question. You guys can react to it if you like. I think this. We are often critical of the Premier League and clubs and blah, blah, blah. I think the response is exactly the response that it should have been. Manchester City's statement coming out almost immediately after the game saying, like, we will find this guy, we will have a full investigation, this does not represent us or our values. The police acting very, very swiftly, arresting the guy, his own employer coming out and saying that he's been suspended from his job. This is strong action. And I think there's a lot of places, including my own country, Italy, where we can learn from this. You know, we didn't get in this endless debate. I mean, Jules, you said he came out and he pretended he was putting his hands in his pockets or whatever. I don't know. Maybe the guy's got movement issues. We're all in agreement that they've done that the authorities have done the right thing thus far. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're also all in agreement, I hope, that anybody who uses this to score points to make generalizations about Man City fans is a freaking moron. So let's move on to that. But I want to point one other thing out, though, which I know the focus has been on racism, has been lost here, is the objects being thrown on the pitch. I saw at least three lighters and a bottle. Fred was actually struck by this. Jules and I were saying before that, you know, this happens in a UEFA game.
Yeah, on the continent.
You have very serious consequences. You have stadium closures. You forfeit the match, which obviously wouldn't have mattered here because they lost anyway. But are you surprised, Mark, that nobody's making a bigger point about this? Because that's really dangerous, well, too. Fred could have just rolled around on the floor for 10 minutes if he'd wanted to. What's your take?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, just roll back a few years. I was in the game, I think it was 2013, when Rio Ferdinand was hit by a coin that was thrown from that same end. He had blood over his eye, and that particular section that the Etihad has issues in terms of it. He's very close to the away fans, and there have been incidents there in the past. Now, you're right, that sort of thing should be clamped down on. It's very difficult to find the people who throw a coin or throw a cigarette lighter. So, you know, I imagine it's very hard to monitor.
No, but what you do here, I mean, you hold the club responsible.
I think that there should be section closures at grounds, but as we all know, the Premier League product is full stadiums, no empty seats, etc. And whether visually the Premier League would like that to happen, blocked empty seats, I'm not sure. But I think with the racing thing as well, I think that section closures at grounds, it's what we all argued for when the Bulgaria fans racially abused England players. We can't have it both ways. If we're applying those strict measures to European countries, then do it to ourselves. If all of a sudden 5,000 seats are closed at a Premier League ground, that's 5,000 fans that, first of all, are being disenfranchised. The club look bad. And I think it's a punishment that would really hurt. It would hurt the fans, it would hurt the club, it would hurt the reputation.
Yeah.
For racism and also for throwing things. I think that it's definitely something we should look at.
I mean, I really hope this doesn't go unnoticed because, you know, with CCTV and whatever else and microphones, they can identify people who racially abuse.
They can do the same with people who throw
lighters
and bottles
to find people to find whoever threw the thing that struck Fred.
Yeah.
Because it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
You know, we all know there's security at grounds. We also all know that it's, if you've ever paid a ticket to have gone to a game, it's extremely easy to bring in whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I just hope that this doesn't get overshadowed here. And again, I'm not having a go at Manchester City at all, but I don't, you know, people have talked about copycat incidents and mimicking PR power was talking about that. This is not what we want to see because this is really, really dangerous. You know, it's a privilege to the way the fans are so close to the action in the Premier League and there's no barriers or whatever else. But, you know, that comes at a price. And I'm hoping that you're wrong, Mark, and it's not just because they don't want to see an empty section and remind viewers and sponsors, oh, this section is closed because there's people there who throw missiles onto the pitch.
No, I mean, listen, if that happened in a Champions League game this week, you know exactly what will happen. The section will be closed. That's just, UEFA are very good and very quick to deal with things. The Premier League, like I say, it's a nice glossy image and it might not suit the powers that be to have ground closures, but sometimes you have to do it.
All right. I hope you're wrong, Mark, but safe travels and enjoy the game. Salzburg.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, Jules, I'm glad. Let's go. I'm giving myself a pat in the back right now because I am really, I know the racism story was a much bigger one.
Big. Yeah, of course.
But This is extremely dangerous, and it's extremely bad, and it's something that, you know, I think every ground is vulnerable to.
But do you think it's because it's so rare in this country? I mean, you and I, there was the same incident at Montpellier. Like in France, it happens a lot, especially in games where it becomes quite hostile and stuff like that. Is it? Do you think it's quite rare here in the Premier League? Is that maybe why people are not making as much about it as they should?
I think it's rare these days in many countries. I mean, it's rare in Italy because so many grounds have tracks and you're so far away. You have to be like, you know, an Olympic caliber. Yeah, exactly. But no, I'd say something.
Serious, I think
that they need to crack down on. One other thing which struck me was here in England in the post game, Gary Neville was very vocal. He made some political points as well about the climate in this country towards race and whatever else. Some people criticized him, some people didn't. I'm not going to stray into politics, don't worry, bosses who are listening to this. But were you, between Gary Neville and also another, and Graham Souness speaking out, I mean, in his case, it was in LGBTQ footballers. Do you sense there's a bit of a shift from football people who are coming out and speaking about issues that go beyond just what's on the pitch?
I think so, yeah, and I'm glad I was very much with Gary Neville, who I kind of, you know, I kind of knew that this is something that he could have said. Graham Souness on Sunday completely caught me off guard. I didn't expect him to speak like this so well as well, and so candidly in a way, which I think is good. Those people don't realize maybe sometimes, and same with us, Gab, maybe not to the same extent, but how important their voice is for a lot of people, and a lot of people really listen and believe in everything about what they say, and it's not just about football, it's about everything else, and in many ways they are examples to other people, and I think the more position they take like that, the better I think it would be for everyone.
Go and check it out. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube and form your own opinion about what Souness and Neville said. Now, let's move on to Serie A, Jules, because we had a huge game. Lazio hosting Juventus on Saturday night. Now, what happened before was Inter had drawn 0-0 with Roma, and so Inter's lead had gone up to 2 points over Juve. And a lot of people looked at this as like, oh, 2 points drop for Inter, blah, blah, blah. Juventus in this game, they take the lead. It looks like things are working. And then Lazio come back, win 3-1, miss a penalty along the way. Yeah. Cuadrado gets sent off. You surprised?
I thought that was coming, I have to say. Even if Juve took the lead.
Coming because I've said every single week Juve are playing rubbish, they're relying on individuals.
Because of you, I have to watch more Italian football than I wish I had to. So I've been watching, I think, the last 4 Juve matches, and they've been really poor. And they avoided, for different reasons, but they avoided dropping more points there and there. There was the point they dropped against Sassuolo, and Buffon helped them massively down the way. But I thought that defeat could have come far earlier in the season. And they were still the only team unbeaten in the big five leagues until this weekend, until that defeat of Lazio. And I did think Lazio in the form that they were
in all competitions, we should say, yes, because otherwise we're going to anger Liverpool fans
in all competitions. And I thought Lazio in the form they were, the way they were playing, which I think with Ciro Immobile up front and the way they're set up by Inzaghi, who might not be everyone's cup of tea, but he's doing an amazing job.
It's amazing.
Let's be honest.
It's
really
amazing.
And I thought, you know what, maybe tonight would be the night. And watching the game, I was really surprised and disappointed again by the way Juve played collectively, which I thought it was very much a game not to lose it, especially after they took the lead, then a game that they wanted to win and they wanted to dominate the game and dominate the opposition. And I don't know where the problem is. You might have a better idea. I don't know if it's just Cristiano's form.
Well, I mean,
if it's the system, the formation, the manager.
I thought Cristiano did all right, actually. I mean, he scored a goal. He had the second one at the end of the first half where, you know, Strakosha saves it on the goal line. But, I mean, to me, it looked as if like the ball was definitely going in. I think what really hurt them was Bentancur going out. Until that point, you had two guys who could play in Bentancur and Pjanic, almost a dual playmaker.
Yeah.
Once they lost that, I just think they really struggled with Lazio. I want to say this about Lazio. We haven't talked about them much. We haven't given them much love. But that front four of Lazio, it's almost as if Lazio have like sort of six defensive players, and then this front four, which they've got, they're all so different from each other, right? So you've got Ciro Immobile, who's a goal scorer, who's in tremendous form, although he missed the penalty. You've got Joaquin Correa, who's, let's face it, he's not even the best Correa out there. That would be the Atletico Madrid one, but he dribbles, he runs so at much people. Energy, he's got so much energy. You've got Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, who is a freak of nature in the sense he's got this very unusual skill set. He's a giant, but he's got those soft feet. He brings both power and he's a tremendous amount of technique. I mean, if he could run, he'd be one of the best players in the world. And then you've got Luis Alberto. Nobody in the big five in Europe has more assists this season than Luis Alberto.
The Liverpool Luis Alberto,
This is the same guy. You know, what, it's funny because everybody laughed. Remember the year they got Luis Alberto and Iago Aspas? Everybody was like, ha, 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 who are these two turds? And then, you know, look at look at what's happened to them, since. They're just so different. Luis Alberto can just invents these incredible assists. That pass to Milinkovic-Savic. I know Milinkovic-Savic, like, the way he kills the ball is just, you're like, wow, unbelievable.
It was a brilliant goal.
But that pass, Cuadrado sending off, no argument. Sarri sort of half complained it. But you know, Jules, I think the issue with Sarri is this, and what we talked about on the show last night, is when Sarri was appointed, most of the media said, oh, look, Juventus are going in a totally different direction. They want to go and dominate the pitch and press and so on. You know, they want to play a more progressive, open football. And they asked Sarri about this, and Sarri said, well, look, that's how I played at Napoli. That's how I tried to play at Chelsea. And I'd argue for a good 3 or 4 months, that's how he played. It's not how he played at the end of the season, but until that point, that's what he tried to do, and he did it pretty well. He's like, I'm not necessarily going to be that guy at Juve because it's a different team with different players. And then he also said, oh, well, but, you know, with Ronaldo, Ronaldo's different. You got to make exceptions for him. So once you do that, because pressing is something you have to do collectively, you're kind of saying, all right, well, we're not going to go and do this because Ronaldo's here. We're just going to accommodate Ronaldo. That's fine if you're that sort of manager. It's almost to me like Sarri decided not to do the things that got him the Juve job in the first place, that built his reputation in the first place, and said, I'm going to do things the way Allegri did them, except they work great for Allegri because Allegri's Allegri, but you're Sarri. You're a different guy. You don't have the same skill set.
Training must be different, right, as well?
It's that too. I mean, the pragmatic approach probably doesn't suit Sarri. I mean, I know there were even people in Italy who praised him because, oh, look, he did it late in the season. He got Chelsea in the top four and won the Europa League. Yeah, I know, but this is a dude who knew he was leaving. You know, it's a bit different.
Yeah, it is.
He was brought in to build a certain identity. And I think the only way Sarri and Juve get out of this is if Sarri says, you know what, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging. I'm going to go and do things,
but you can't drop Ronaldo, right? Until Ronaldo is in that team, there's no other way of playing, right?
I think the solution is to play Ronaldo at center forward and figure things out around him.
Yeah, but one, he probably doesn't want to.
I appreciate he doesn't want to, but presumably he wants to play.
But you know exactly what lone strikers, well, center forwards do in a Sarri system and the way Sarri wants to play. Can Ronaldo do that? Can Ronaldo do what Higuain did in that season or what Mertens did after him?
Higuain can do what Higuain did.
I know. Is the problem is just a mismatch of like, you can't have Sarri playing what is his best football as a manager with Ronaldo.
You can have the Sarri concepts. You can have the Sarri concepts in terms of pressing and so on. And look, they're more talented than 95% of the teams they face, right? So, I think it'll still work, but you have to build towards something. And I think the other thing that really hurt them is, and people will point out to all the injuries they have, you know, free transfers are a little bit like a drug. I'm not saying these are bad players, but Emre Can, Rabiot, Aaron Ramsey, Sami Khedira. There's a reason these guys weren't offered the kind of contracts that kept them at their old clubs. Now, I know you've got injuries here, you've got issues there, and obviously Khedira was phenomenal for Juve for a couple of seasons. But I'd argue we haven't seen enough of these other guys given all the money that went into them. And, you know, and maybe Ramsey, it's a fitness thing. Rabiot, I'm guessing, is a mind thing.
Confidence thing, maybe.
But that puts the same strain on the same guys, on Blaise Matuidi, on Pjanic, who, by the way, suspended for the next game.
Yeah.
So that it's 2 points. I'm certainly not going to crown Inter champions right now. But Sarri, I think, needs to go and figure something out because this isn't working.
So Juve have Bayer Leverkusen away in the Champions League. They already qualified. So, but then they play Udinese at home. They go to Sampdoria, and then they've got Lazio again, but in the Coppa d'Italia, in Supercoppa or something. They would be okay getting into Christmas, right? You can't then drop point against Udinese and Sampdoria after the horror show of Saturday, right?
No, I think they will be fine. And bear in mind too, I mean, Inter are without Barella and Sensi, who, yeah, you know.
And for the first time, they haven't scored. Yeah, they didn't score against Roma for the first time.
So, you know, Juve may well be top by Christmas, but I think there's an underlying issue, which is, yeah, there's no point having Sarri. If Sarri's not going to be Sarri, I'm going to check something else out, which Craig Burley pulled out of the blue on the show last night. But I was thinking to myself, you know what? I can see the logic here. Now, Burley basically said, well, what if they sack Sarri? There's a manager who they tried to get repeatedly. Yeah. It's not Pep Guardiola, but they couldn't get in the summer. But he's available now, and that's Mauricio Pochettino.
Yeah.
Would that be way too left field? How would you feel about that?
Yeah, come on. Surely not.
I was thinking about this.
Surely not.
If you're Pochettino, I mean...
Oh, so Pochettino is great.
I mean, you can hang around for a United job, which may or may not materialize. I don't think Real Madrid opening will be there. Would this not make sense? Would it be good?
Yeah, no, he would. But
I mean, if I'd have the choice, I would have appointed Pochettino in the summer, not Sarri.
Yeah, I think,
right?
he probably
every
fits,
day of the week.
Yeah, he fits that squad and a lot of the idea around here much better than Sarri, I think. But Juve are not a club who could sack Sarri almost for no reason in December,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and again, to be fair to Sarri, despite all this, despite playing so bad, and this speaks more to just to the talent they have, as you said, it's their first defeat of the season in all competitions.
Yeah.
They've already won their Champions League group, and I think their points total, despite being in second place, is one of the highest that they've had at this stage of the season,
yeah,
in the last 10 years. All right, Jules, Bundesliga. I know you're a hipster. I want to be hipster. It's so exciting.
It is. It's such an exciting season for them.
Borussia Mönchengladbach, my man Marco Rose, hosting Bayern.
Were you confident before the game? Be honest. What did you think would happen? Before saying what happens, what did you think would happen?
So I thought it was going to be a draw, and I thought it was going to be a draw because Gladbach are such a high energy team.
Yeah.
I thought Bayern, especially at the back, regardless who they played there, I think, you know, it makes a difference if you're missing your starters, if you're, you know, if you're playing Alaba back there or Boateng at his age and Javi Martinez, Boateng and with his injuries. When I saw that Gnabry was out, especially,
yeah,
I was
that's
pretty
the
confident,
big one for me,
all right, Gladbach aren't going to lose this. Instead, though, I was wrong, because Bayern came out there and absolutely freaking road graded them. Yeah,
it was
absolutely
crazy.
Like, they could have been 3-0 up inside half an hour.
Easily.
That Thomas Müller, I got to say this, like, and people get angry when I say this. You know, a few years ago, people had Thomas Müller as a top 5, top 10 player in the world.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, he's fantastic, but he's unusual because he's probably the best uncoordinated, not super technically gifted, outstanding player in the world.
True.
We saw that with that goal that he missed, right?
Oh, my God.
The ball goes right past him, and it's like he can't sort his body out.
It was so strange. But Hansi Flick has done some good things, let's be honest. Nice 2 defeats in a row. 2 defeats that maybe don't really do justice to the performance of Bayern in those 2 games.
Not maybe, they definitely don't.
Yeah, definitely
Bayern
don't.
Played well in both games for most of the game.
But I'm still not sure about Thomas Müller starting in that team. Certainly not the way he played at the weekend when you've got Perisic on the bench, who is far better suited, for example, as a Gnabry replacement and did well when he came on for Tolisso and there was a little reshuffle. But I mean, I can see why Flick goes with Müller, who Kovac was completely snubbing, you know, in the first 2 months of the season.
But it's basically Müller or Coutinho that you're going to play there. And who's going to give you more in terms of press and energy and those things that Flick wants to wants to bring back, feels like he needs to bring back.
I have to say, I'm struggling with Müller at all, completely. I mean, against Olympiacos, he's fine in the Champions League, but in a game like this, I thought when I saw the lineups, I was like, I'm not sure about that.
I think I like Müller a lot more than you do.
But do you see my point or not?
Yeah, no, I see your point.
In games like that,
it's not just on Müller missing chances. The Lewandowski chance, again, you're so used to him burying him. It's now, what, like two games without a goal for Lewandowski, which is a massive crisis given how
he was scored for each of them for the first 18.
And then the Kimmich shot where, okay, we believe in goal line technology.
Yeah.
My eyes tell me that ball crossed the line. I don't know what, but
like, I don't know. I saw it. Like watching it, even before replays or anything like that, it looked in.
It looked in. It looked in, but hey, we believe in goal line technology.
Yeah, we do.
So Gladbach battered, and then right around the hour mark, there's a whole change. And I wrote in my column, this is like a big mental switch off, because if you look at the equalizer, Ben Sabani, he is completely unmarked. I don't know if there was somebody who forgot to mark him. I don't know if it's just poor set-piece defending. He gets the header, and at that point, it's 1-1. And at that point, Bayern do try to win the game, but they're chaotic and they're disorganized.
You can feel something.
But the second goal, it's a trademark counter. They've got so much pace. You've got Marcus Thuram coming into the box. Kimmich, who played right back in this game, incidentally, he didn't play Pavard for some reason. People said, oh, Pavard was tired. I suggest maybe Pavard's not particularly good. But all right, so Kimmich kind of fluffs his clearance, and the ball runs through. But Kimmich is still right there.
Yeah.
He can still totally shepherd Thuram along. Out of nowhere, Javi Martinez, who'd come on earlier, comes in.
Injury,
giant steps.
You could see it coming.
Steam train.
You could see it coming. So
two-footed tackle. And you know what? He might have gotten to the ball first. Yeah. He might not. It's still very, very close. But it's so unnecessary. And as it happens, he brings him down, and it's a penalty, and they lose 2-1. Man, you know, Javi Martinez at his age should be making better decisions.
Yeah, completely.
But what is it, Jules? What? How do you get a team that's so used to winning, that has a winning mentality, they're so in control, and then you've got these two massive switch-offs which cost you the game?
I don't know. I think, is it... In Martinez's case, the fact that he hasn't played much. I mean, he's played a bit more since Flick has arrived because of all the injuries they've had at the back. You know, is it because of that? Is there a bit of frustration that he was on the bench in a game like this where maybe he thought he was going to start? I don't know. It's a really, really strange one. I do think that Flick didn't get his lineup right for this game.
What would you have done?
Müller wouldn't have started.
You would
have
played Coutinho.
I would have played Coutinho. I think Perisic would have started as well. And
Perisic instead of Coman.
You could put Coman on one side, Perisic on the other one, and still Coutinho playing behind Lewandowski. No Goretzka, or you drop Goretzka a bit deeper. Goretzka, I'm still not convinced either. I'm really not convinced. I loved him at Schalke, and he was very good. He's one of those.
He's had his injuries.
Yeah, he's had injuries, and I don't know. I was not too convinced by what Flick did, but he got let down by some of his senior players. And I don't think people should forget everything that he's done since arriving, because Bayern is a much better team now than they were under Kovac, even if they've lost two games in a row now, like we said, very much against the run of play.
No, and that's why I think they're going to be fine. But here's a stat for you. So they're seventh. They're 7 points back. I went back to look at the last time they were this low in the table.
Yeah.
And it was in 2009, I think. And then I said, well, how far back do you have to go to find a position where they were worse off?
Yeah.
And I went all the way back to 1999, and then I got bored. So it's sometime before 1999. It's at least 20 years that, you know, they haven't been, lower than this in the table. They can turn it around, but can they win the Bundesliga?
I still think they can. I really think they can, because I think Gladbach, there will be a point where, even if I think they have good depth in their squads, and, you know, Lars Tindall started this game, for example. I think Raphael came on late as well. And they will play, they will go through in the Europa League, so they will still have Thursday, Sunday, come the new year. I do think that at some point the pressure will get to them. I think they will get tired. And I think Rosa being a young, inexperienced manager in many respects, not that Flick is much more experienced, but I think that will come into consideration a bit, like we saw with Dortmund last season when they should have never lost that title. They were 9 points clear and they still lost it. I do think that there will be maybe a switch of
I don't know if Gladbach win it, but right now if I put my money, I would go with Leipzig. Actually, they're just 1 point behind them. I don't see Bayern.
But don't you think Leipzig is a similar issue? When you get down to April and you're leading or you're not far from the top and your team is too young.
With Leipzig, I think the big factor is the team is young, but also it's not like they're babies, right? I mean, we've been calling them young for a long time. But
Upamecano and Konate and Mukiele and all those defenders.
Well, but equally going forward, Forsberg, Sabitzer.
Yeah.
Werner's not old, but he's been, you know, he's got many years of experience. And I think the main discriminant is if they see a problem physically and they decide to add depth or add bodies in January, they have the financial resources to go and do that.
Will. Yeah, they could even get Haaland, for what we know.
Anyway, I think this is fascinating. Dortmund in the conversation now as well. We love our Bundesliga.
Incredible.
All right, that said, enough Bundesliga. Let's move on to something which is decisively more fun. Like Liverpool, they beat up a depleted Bournemouth. It's 3-0 as Jurgen Klopp mixes things up a bit ahead of the Champions League, the Club World Cup, and of course their brutal run of fixtures. Jules, are you ready to crown them champions?
I am indeed, Gab. They will win their first title in 30 years. I'm giving you the exclusive now, comes May. You know what I would like to see, and I won't get to see it, which I think is a bit of a shame. I would like them to go for every title, because I really believe that this could be the year where everything going their way, where they could actually maybe win the Champions League again, the Premier League. I think they're good enough to do everything, to win everything, but they won't, because I think at some point they will prioritize. Obviously, the League Cup, for example, is an absolute mess, because the game against Villa is at the time where the squad is already in Qatar and all of that. But I really believe that this could be the year where they could actually win everything, every trophy. They won't. And I would like them to go for it. And they won't even go for it, because I think Klopp at some point, and rightly so, would prioritize the league, which is probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, I don't think they have the squad to go for everything. This is where we disagree. They're certainly on their way. I think by January, if the lead is still where it is and it's still Leicester in second place, I'll be ready to crown them.
Okay. Well, talking about Leicester, 9 consecutive wins in a row, including a 4-1 pasting of Aston Villa on Sunday. Jamie Vardy on fire, scoring in each of those 8. Gab, Leicester are 8 back, but will it last?
So analytics says no. It's crazy. No. They're outperforming. I know. I'll get hate mail from Craig Burley for this, but they're outperforming expected goals by about 10.
Yeah.
They're outperforming expected goals conceded by like 6 or 7. And I think Brendan realizes this. I think this is part of the reason why he's mixed things up. You know, they played that different system. They played a diamond at the weekend.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to find different solutions, because I think he realizes that, you know what, we had the rub of the green in a number of these games. Let me see if I can keep people on their toes, get better production. Even in that game against Villa early on, if that goal goes in, if Tyrone Mings doesn't pull a hammy.
Hang on. How can you get injured, right? Pretend you're not injured, stay on the pitch, and cost your team a goal. How is that acceptable? And I don't care. He's a nice guy. I used to be a mortgage broker, whatever doing. I don't care. You're injured.
But
come off. What are you doing?
Broker.
What are you doing?
I don't know.
I was fuming from the television. If I'd been a Villa fan, I would have been crazy.
I think that's a really good point.
It's just like, what are you doing, mate? Stop trying to play Superman and you're the savior, and I'm injured, but I'm Franz Beckenbauer and I can't move my arm, but I'm still going to play you're not. Just come off, get it's someone also, fresh, and you don't concede that goal.
It's also the type of injury, right?
Exactly.
If your friend's Beckenbauer and you're like, oh, look, you know, my arm is broken, but I'm in a World Cup semifinal, I'll just go and I'll just ignore the pain, right?
Yeah.
But if it's your hamstring, it's completely different.
You can't even walk, man.
I know.
Leicester, obviously play City and Liverpool back to back, 21st of December and then Boxing Day. So by then, you know.
We'll have a clear idea.
Yeah, exactly.
A week ago, Lionel Messi won his 6th Ballon d'Or. And of course, we told you about it ahead of time at a world exclusive here on the Gavin Jewell Show. Cause nobody could see that coming.
Of course.
And on Saturday, he scored a hat trick in their 5-2 win over Mallorca. But Jules, since I know you love spectacular goals, how about the Luis Suarez back heel?
And it's not just the back heel, which he hits in the ground a bit like the Mesut Ozil, you know, inside of his foot, and the ball bounces off. And
it's like a golf sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
That. Mesut Ozil reference.
Of course.
Do we have to shoehorn Arsenal into everything?
Mesut Ozil, this is the trademark, where he hits the ball on purpose in the ground, so the ball sort of
bounces. How about we talk about Patrick Kluivert, who scored a similar goal like that? Anyway,
this is Mesut Ozil trademark.
Mesut Ozil.
Big up to you, Mesut. But it's a lovely goal. The build-up is good, although I thought De Jong had a few too many touches in it, but this just me being a bit, you know, prickly. It's a great finish. There's not much else he could do apart from trying it, right?
I disagree here.
No.
Okay, so this is the point as I see it, right? So he's got his back to goal. He's got the defender on him. There's a couple of things, all right, that you can do. First of all, you can try to turn your defender. You can lay it off for a runner. There's 101 safer things to do. What I loved about this is A, the creativity to think that, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And I know he's going to come across, so I'm going to go and I'm going to do that weird chip, which is incredibly difficult to pull off.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is Suarez's courage. And maybe at 30, you know, 33 or however old he is, you don't care about these things. But how stupid do you look if you try something like that don't pull it off?
Yeah.
Can you imagine like the look you would have got from it? So big ups to Luis Suarez, imagination, and the guy's got big stones to go and attack.
Yeah, true. And we've criticized him, and he's not the player he used to be, you know, Liverpool years and stuff. He's overweight, he's slow, he's got one knee left, he's going to go to MLS soon, you know, and obviously he's preventing my boy Griezmann to play better and in his position.
Griezmann was all right this game.
Yeah, he was all right, to be fair. But this shows what a genius Luis Suarez is, was, and will ever be, because this is a fantastic goal. No Bale, no Hazard, no problem. Uncle Karim is there as Real Madrid beat Espanyol 2-0. Gab, 8 goals in his last 6 games, 15 in all competitions this season for the Frenchman. Is it really just a case of letting him shine away from Ronaldo's shadow?
So this is
Show him some love.
This is the stock answer that, you know, it's as simple as that he was working hard for Cristiano and Gareth Bale and the Galacticos, and now at this stage of his career that, you know, they're not there, or Bale is there only in spirit. He left that match, by the way, 10 minutes before full time. I mean, he was injured. But, you know, again, he really doesn't care. or doesn't care what people think, I should say. You know, he's like, I'm not fit.
You're allowed. You have said this is a part of the rules for the squad. And he's not the only one to do that. A few of the ones who come and are not playing, for example, leave at that time. So you avoid maybe being like, you know, going out with a crowd at the same time, right? That's the idea.
I know he was allowed. He didn't break any rules, but still, whatever. But Benzema, I think it's phenomenal. And I think back to all those times, all the different managers he had. Think back to Mourinho saying, you know, sometimes you want to go hunting with a dog, but you got to go hunting with a cat, which I thought was – it's one of those quotes that in some ways hasn't aged well, because now we see Benzema for where he is, a phenomenal center forward.
Yeah.
In other things, I love the imagination of Mourinho. Like, who goes hunting with a cat? Like,
when did he come up with that? You know,
I thought it was – well done, Jose.
Yeah.
But no, I think he's caring. He had Rodrigo and Vinicius either side of him, right? Combined age of 37 years old. This shows leadership. It shows personality. It shows charisma. All these things that he supposedly didn't have. You tell me two things. One, should Didier Deschamps have a rethink here?
Yes.
And two, this is the same guy. Remember when he was involved in that weird sex tape thing with a little man?
With Valbuena,
Is this the same dude? Is he just matured? Was it always inside him? Or
no, he was always there. I mean, let's be honest. For the people who saw him coming onto the scenes at Lyon when he was 18 or 17 even. Well, I think even actually 16. He was already, there was no way he was not going to have an amazing career. He was so good. He was so determined. He had that edge in him, which, I mean, I guess, you know, led on him onto getting into weird stories or dodgy stories off the pitch. But on the pitch, there was never any doubt. Of all the players I've seen young, there's not many like him or Kylian Mbappe, that kind of standard, really. And I think he deserves, and he's coming late because he's 32 at the end of the month. And in many ways, all this recognition now that he has and all this loving, which he never got before, or a bit last season, but all that loving, he deserves it so much. And I'm glad people seeing just a bit beyond just the videos that he could put on social media and his like Bugatti Veyron and all that stuff that he loves and that's part of him as well. He also has two small children that he really loves and he's a great father. And I just love the guy. And it might not be everyone's cup of tea for all the other issues, but on the pitch this season, I don't think there's many players like him this season where everything he does is good. Right. There's not a bad touch. There's not a bad pass. There's not a bad run. There's not a bad movement.
So does Deschamps not call him to the national team simply because it frankly would be unfair and France would be too good if they added
Benzema of course.
As well? Is that it?
I wish it was, Gab, and it's not one for now, but the issue goes deeper between them two and he's still...
Wait, does he have a tape on Deschamps as well?
Well, you wonder. No, but him being dropped by Deschamps, to make it quick, Deschamps... Then Karim gave an interview in a Spanish newspaper saying that Deschamps responded in dropping him to the racist part of France. And that led to a lot of people being angry at Deschamps for it. Deschamps' second home in Brittany got tagged racist on the wall, on the big wall of the property. And Deschamps still hasn't forgiven Karim for basically telling the whole world that he thought Deschamps was racist.
So as a result, France have to go to the Euros with a rubbish center forward like Kylian Mbappe.
Yes, yeah, and Griezmann.
All right, let's stick to France. Keylor Navas gets hit on the head with a bottle thrown from the stands. Paris Saint-Germain go a goal down, but they turn it on at the end with goals from Neymar, Mbappe, and Icardi. Neymar, of course, the poor man's Marcus Rashford.
Yes.
Copyright Mark Ogden, 2019. Jules, are we seeing the best Neymar we've seen in a long time?
We saw him between the 72nd minute and the last of the rest of the game because
that's all you got. That's all you need, man.
Yeah, that's all I need, and I'm very happy, and I love him. I love him. He just
full time Neymar would be unfair on the rest of Liga.
Yeah,
right?
True, very true. But he was a hostile game against Montpellier away, where the team it was hostile in the stands. The Montpellier team were really physical with Neymar, with Mbappe. They were very aggressive and it worked because PSG did nothing for 70 minutes. Montpellier went 1-0 up and then one of the players, Pedro Mendes, got sent off and then it all changed and Neymar scored an incredible free kick where you knew exactly where the ball was going to go. The Montpellier keeper really knew exactly where the ball was going to go and it still went in the top corner and you just, no one could not stop that ball, not even Ter Stegen, not even Oblak, not even Alisson, no one. And then you saw the best of him. He sets up Mbappe for the second goal. Mbappe scored it and Mbappe set up Icardi for the third goal. The Montpellier players were really unhappy with Neymar, saying that he was showboating at the end. He was disrespectful again, that he was doing 1-2s all the time and that he did nothing for an hour, which maybe they've got a point. I don't know. I just think the guy's an absolute genius. And he was frustrated for an hour. He was a bit irritating watching the game and probably playing against him for an hour. And after that, when he was on the ball, on the game, he was just incredible.
And Mamarito again.
However, there's still issues up in Paris. They're not playing well. When Verratti is not there, they lack a lot of creativity because Neymar can't do it all by himself.
You need the Italian guy to keep everything together.
And Mbappe, yeah. And Mbappe either, but
you mean Paredes can't do what Verratti does, really?
Funnily enough, no. But PSG won for the first time in Montpellier since 2015. So hey, it's not all bad, I guess. Inter are 2 points clear at the top of Serie A despite drawing at home to Roma on Friday 0-0. Gab, should Conte be annoyed at that draw or happy at Juve losing on Saturday? Although he didn't know they were going to lose, you know.
You're asking, yeah, what should Conte's state of mind be right now? Yeah. And I would say that on the Antoniometer, it's probably set to 11, which is the usual setting, a scale of 1 to 10. No, I'm sure he's annoyed, but he shouldn't be. Because Roma are a good team. Roma set up very well. Roma depleted. I mean, both teams depleted, to be fair. Zaniolo at center forward. But Inter created a bunch of chances. Roma defended very well. They had the reserve keeper in there, Mirante, who turned one of those guys who was like a superstar at 18 or 19. People thought he was going to be a great keeper. Career didn't quite work out that way. You know, now in his mid-30s, can still make a difference. You're not going to win any game. They're going along at an incredible rate. I think you should be happy. 2 points clear. Should thank Lazio and look forward to getting Barella and Sensi back in midfield. Jose Mourinho's Tottenham Hotspur roar back from the midweek defeat at Old Trafford to beat up Burnley 5-0. But Jules, has Hongmin Son already wrapped up the goal of the season?
Oh, yeah.
And as an addendum, because we had this question extra time last night, was it a better goal than Luis Suarez's?
Whoa. So, the first question, yes, this is goal of the season. This is already one of the goals of the decade that we're coming to an end now. I think it's as good as, I don't know, the Scorpion goal from Giroud, the overhead kick from Rooney, the halfway line lob from Rooney, some of the Suarez goals. Anything you want is there. It's right there. There's 13 touches.
Not when the Felipe Mex's goal though.
No, because it's Philip Mexico.
Or Zlatan against England. But go ahead.
Or Zlatan against Bastia, I guess, in many respects, if you remember that one. But it's amazing. He gets the ball on the edge of his own box, runs the whole length of the pitch, 13 touches. There's a few seconds in between.
Beats two players along the way.
Well, he's got some behind that you still have to count.
This is what gets me. Somebody made the point, right? Because somebody was comparing it to Maradona's goal at the Azteca, which... Let's not be blasphemous here. But I said, well, but Son only beat two players. I'm like, yeah, because he only had to beat two players because everybody else
couldn't just catch him. Exactly. You know? It's a bit similar to the George Weah goal for Milan.
Yes.
In the sense, and hear me out, I take nothing away from the goal. It's an amazing goal. It's an incredible goal. But it's on a Burnley corner, which means it's a goal in transition, which means the Burnley defenders are not, the Burnley team, full stop, is not in shape at all. Then they're not organized like they would be if Spurs had the ball trying to build up an attack, right? I think everybody gets that. It's a counter-attacking goal against defenders who are not defending because they went up for the corner. Yeah. So
he's probably up against the. I mean, obviously, who it is, but he's probably the fullbacks are probably the furthest
probably,
back.
Yeah, maybe. A defensive midfielder like someone.
But
like
even
that.
Then, it's but not even like it's not like if Ben Mee had been back there, like all
no,
of
no,
a sudden,
no, no,
fancy
but,
Ben Mee to beat Son in a foot race.
No, but he does it because he's got all that space to run
right,
into.
Of course, yeah,
of course. But it's still an incredible goal, and to be still composed like that to finish it after you've run, and you see at the end after the goal, he needs a few seconds to catch his breath because it's incredible.
Absolutely thrilling, and if you can find it on YouTube, find it with the Korean commentary because it's
much
better.
Which is even better, yeah. Interim boss Big Duncan Ferguson leads Everton past Chelsea 3-1. Gab, they're still fourth, Chelsea that is, but just one win in five for Lampard now. Is he getting something wrong? How do you explain that?
I think we're at the stage with Lampard where, you know, he realizes... Probably realized this before, but he's got a lot of young players. I think there's a lot of people at similar levels, frankly. Yeah. And it's about getting the right combination for the game. You know, he switched this up again, in different areas of the pitch. He dropped Jorginho, Azpilicueta, a left back. He's trying to find solutions. I think he knows he needs to go and recalibrate things. Chelsea didn't play particularly well. I thought they probably played better than they did in their last home outing against West Ham. And obviously they won in midweek against Villa. What I would say is that two of the three goals were individual defensive errors. Yeah. One from Kurt Zouma, who I think is his fourth best.
He's improved.
Whatever he's improved. Like, if you can't pass and you make silly mistakes, then whatever. Christensen wasn't great, but equally, though, I think you need Christensen in there for his passing and his build-up play against most teams. But let's not forget, you got to take the good with the bad with Kepa and then eventually figure out whether it's worth it.
Yeah.
But he's been playing all season long without his best defender.
I know, but man,
by far.
On.
By far.
Every week people say, yeah, Rudiger is coming back. Yeah, Rudiger is fit again, he's coming back. The dude has never played, like, he hasn't played this season.
No, that would be Loftus Cheek, you think he's coming back.
No, it's Rudiger
back.
As well.
No, Rudiger, yeah. I'm told he's in training, so.
So, what, it's he's been in training for the last?
But it's not his fault, the dude's not there.
Like, come on, it's, you know.
Okay, but let's just remind yourselves, okay, before you go and you crucify your friend Frank, okay, that they had a transfer ban.
Yeah.
That his defenders are a guy who had played, I think, 0 minutes of top flight football before this year and played for something called Derby and something called the Championship last year.
Another guy's
freaking Kurt Zuma. And, although it's cool, martial artist, blah, blah, blah. What was the funny story you told me?
Kickboxer.
And the third one is Christensen, who is a confidence player and who's coming off an injury. Okay, so
do you think Lampard has too many options? His life would be easier if he had less options and actually to pick from.
This is the thing, and this is what is so, so difficult. His life would be easier if there was a clear hierarchy. If he said, all right, these 8 or 9 guys always play, and then these 3 or 4 guys come in, and then everybody else just comes in special situations, right? But he's not at that level. And with young players, you're often not going to be at that level. You're going to have these situations where, you know, one guy goes up, one guy goes down. I personally think Mason Mount could use a rest, simply because he hasn't been productive of late.
I agree.
I think, I understand what he did with dropping Jorginho. But equally, Jorginho, especially this season's Jorginho, is really, really important. Kovacic can only do some of the things Jorginho does. Mm. He's so far ahead of the curve. I think we need to remind that. I wouldn't be concerned.
Yeah.
He'll find a solution. Now, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about Lucien Favre getting sacked. Now, after beating Dusseldorf 5-0, they're third in the table. Marco Reus and Jadon Sancho, 2 goals each. How about that? And they could advance to the knockout phase of the Champions League this week, although they do not control their destiny. Jules, were we all wrong about Favre?
No, we were not. It's not because there's two convincing one. Well, especially this one. The one against
Dusseldorf is terrible.
Yeah, and the one against Hertha the weekend before.
It was Klinsmann.
They won 2-1, and they got a player sent, Mats Hummels got sent off, and it was not that pretty. This weekend was far convincing, but again, I think I need to see more. I'm still not sure if the issue I've got with Favre, and I think he's one of the best tactician and one of the best manager to improve you, especially if you're a young player and you know you still have a lot to learn. I'm not sure he's got the personality and the character to be able to ride the whole, like, through the whole season, to win a title like that, to be able to shout when needed, because he never shouts, he never gets angry with the players, or when he does, he doesn't really tell them, he doesn't tell them off. And I think this is the issue I have. He's an amazing guy. I've met him a couple of times. He's a lovely, lovely guy. He's a great coach, but I'm just not sure if he's got in him what makes those coaches the best in the world, which is that bit of nastiness a bit, if you want, even with your own team.
And I think with that group of players,
he needs to, definitely. I'm staying in Germany again. Leipzig are now second in the table with a 3-1 win over Hoffenheim. Gab, I know you love Marco Rose. Can you show Julian Nagelsmann, who was playing against his former team, by the way, some love too?
Absolutely. He's got all Kid Rock. You know, it's not bragging. He says it and then he backs it up. You know, I mean, they're in an absolute tear. Was it like 32 goals in their last 8 games?
Yeah,
something stupid like that. I don't know. I wonder what can stop them. I think it's either injuries to certain players, Sabitzer and Werner in particular. Yeah. And, you know, Forsberg weirdly is supposed to be the value added guy. I think he's coming back to his best, but obviously he's in a situation now where it's almost like they don't need him as much as they did before.
Exactly. And I
just think it's fatigue. That's what could do them, because when you play with so much intensity, but then again, they have that stupidly long German winter break coming up, you know, where they're off for like 10 weeks. So, right now, like I said, they're my favorites to win the Bundesliga.
Imagine if Leipzig win it. considering where they're coming from, how the club was built, and we're not going to go back all those years ago, but they're not very liked.
I'm just glad that you don't mention their sponsor, because I don't want to give them any free airtime.
But how would you feel, but also how do you think German football would feel if they were to beat Bayern and Dortmund and, like, you know, more historical club, let's put it that way, to win what would be their first Bundesliga title?
They wouldn't like it, and they wouldn't like the club, and they wouldn't like what it stands for. I don't like what it stands for. Yeah. I don't like the way this was done. But equally, there's that. And then there's the work that Nagelsmann and Rangnick have done, their scouting, the development they've done. And I think that's been, on a professional level, that's been remarkable. And I think you have to go and celebrate that. This dude's first season at the club, doing this. Yeah. It's remarkable. See? There's more to Ligue 1 than Paris Saint-Germain.
There is.
Olympique Marseille notched their sixth win in a row, beating Bordeaux 3-1. Can André Villas-Boas really challenge for the title? You down with AVB?
Yeah, I mean, they're five points behind with a game more, potentially eight points. I don't think it will happen. I don't think they'll challenge.
He's 42 years old. It feels like he's been around.
For 20 years.
Yeah,
he was 22 when he arrived at Porto. No, but he's doing a great job, and we said it a bit last week as well, and he is, as you said, six wins in a row now. The record is eight under Bielsa back in 2014 for Marseille, and they play obviously a very different way. He's a very different coach than Bielsa is, but the players love him. He's so good, in a human sense, in a sort of man management sense.
Funny that this is really relevant what you say, right? He's so good in the human sense,
because
in the man management sense. This is exactly one of the things that he got criticized for at Chelsea and at Spurs.
Yeah, completely.
You know, you remember people said, like, he didn't look you in the eye, he looked down, he was weird.
But he was younger than some of his players in those clubs.
He was.
Which couldn't have been easy either.
You know, this goes to me something that we so often forget. We pigeonhole managers, we describe them, and we say, like, you know, Mourinho's like this, Klopp is like that. Yeah. No. These guys are human beings. They actually grow and they actually evolve.
Yeah,
as
you're
well.
Right. And change.
There's no question he's done this.
Yeah, definitely. And then on the pitch, you see why he was so highly rated at some point, because the structure in the way they play, the energy again, the intensity. I mean, even Dimitri Payet, who, you know, as we said many times, loves a Kinder Bueno and is probably still overweight, and he's 32. And yet he runs the game like he did on Sunday night against Bordeaux, where he was outstanding, I thought. And it's just Villas-Boas managing to get the best out of those guys, which I think is brilliant, because he has a small squad. There's no money to spend. His best player, Florian Thauvin, hasn't played because he's been injured since the first week of the season. There's young players there who don't have much experience, and he couldn't recruit much because there's no money. And yet he's doing an amazing job. So well done to him.
Okay, but before we plead poverty, the reason there's no money is because they spent so much freaking money before.
True.
Just to be clear on this.
But that's not AVB's fault, right? Yeah, you're right. And finally, I mean, we had to end the show on this, because it is the story.
I would have done the whole show on
this.
Yeah,
you're right. It is the story, at least for Gab and I, of the weekend. Betis beat Athletic Bilbao 3-2. That's okay, you know, that happens. But who scored the three goals for Betis? That's the story. It's Joaquin. In 20 minutes, scored a hat-trick. And let's not forget, he's 38 years old. Gab, how incredible is this?
It's incredible on so many levels. It's incredible also, this is the first hat-trick of his career. He never scored very many goals.
True.
I think his season high is 9, and he has 6 already. He's 38 years old. I'm trying to get a bit romantic, but Joaquin was kind of like the last of the old style wingers. You know, you remember those wingers who they would get the ball and then they would kind of stop, slow things down, then they would beat you, and they would pin the cross. So much talent. Watch his highlight reel. The guy's incredible. Also, you know, not the sort of the little quick jittery winger. You know, he was a winger who beat you with talent and creativity. He was never a phenomenal athlete. What I find incredible about this, about him too, was, I have to remind myself of this. He has 51 caps for Spain, which is a lot. He's like in their top 25, 30. He was 26 years old when he won his final cap. So this is a guy who at like 18 or 19, people thought, oh my God, next big thing, absolutely massive. And then at some point, Luis Aragonés decides, now, you know what? we're not going to play with those types of wingers. We're all going to be possession oriented and blah, 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 and pressing and yada, yada, yada. And his Spain career just ends at 26.
It's just crazy.
That was 12 years ago.
I know, man. It's crazy.
I mean, Spain were vindicated a little bit because they did win 2 Euros in a World Cup. But Joaquin's just one of those incredible romantic stories. I remember he came to Fiorentina like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And people thought, oh, look, he's coming over to teach the kids, you know, plays a couple seasons at Fiorentina, then goes back to Betis where it all started.
That's lovely as well, isn't it?
It's absolutely fantastic. Really one of the good guys. And if you happen to be a younger listener, educate yourself about the genius that is Joaquin.
And he's out of contract in the summer, so let's hope that after a game like that, they have to give him a new deal, right?
He turns 39 in the summer.
I know, but still, one more year, and then he gets to 40, and then he can go.
I have this fantasy where he plays with Zlatan.
Oh, my God, can you imagine?
I know.
That would
Joaquin,
be something.
Zlatan, and Ribery. That's my master's team. That's my front three. All right, Jules, we've come to the end of the show, and I haven't learned any irrelevant facts, nor have I shoehorned in a needless WWE reference here.
So there's one WWE reference, which is my pointless fact of the week as well. I thought we'd combine them this week.
Go for it, because then I'll just steer it back towards ECW, because, of course, that means a lot more to me.
Does it?
ECW?
Why?
You know my history with ECW.
No.
I was at university where it all began. I went to my first ECW show way back in 1994,
really?
Back when you were in kindergarten, Jules. And while I do have connections to WWE as well, I was at Shane McMahon's wedding.
You kept that secret.
Paul Heyman is
you
one of my heroes.
Secret.
I might post a picture of me from a couple years ago with Paul Heyman.
So Enes Kanter, not sure if you follow UNBA that closely, but he's the Turkish basketball player who plays for the Boston Celtics.
Yes.
And he's a huge wrestling fan to the point that he's 27 now, so there's a few years to go, but he could well go into wrestling once his basketball career is over. He said
like Tim Visa.
Yeah.
Do you remember
similar.
Tim Visa? Okay, we got to say this again. We got to educate. This
is
us. Yeah. Tim Visa was a goalkeeper for Werder Bremen. Not particularly good.
No, but long hair, quite stylish, to be fair.
Yeah, it's for a German guy.
He
wrestled a couple of WWE shows after he retired.
Yes,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so Kanter had a parody bout against R-Truth at the Madison Square Garden. I think it was in September. And he really fancies going into it, which I think is amazing. I love that stuff. I love people like him who's thinking already ahead and like, do you know what? I could do something even cooler than NBA basketball later. WWE. What about wrestling? I'm like, wow. So he's already had meeting with your mate, Paul Heyman, who I think he knows very well, and Triple H, who is now part of, you know, the whole, who's the director there or whatever.
Triple H, who's married to? Stephanie McMahon.
Really?
Damn, you should know
that's
these
things.
That's a great
things. Couple. No, I don't know these things. I watch it with the kids, but you know, I know, but still. So, it's a shout out to Enes Kanter. Good on you, who likes his football as well, by the way. So,
Enes, I'll be even more impressed if you go and do a couple old style hardcore matches, like a sort of Balls Mahoney, Axel style. That would impress me even more. Anyway, we've come to the end. Till next week. Bye bye.